Okay, there, the button worked. Good afternoon,
Yeah.
it's Friday, and I just can't even tell that it's Friday. It feels like Monday to me because it's been such a busy Mike Vandervoort hosting today, September 18th, very lovely day here in Georgia, and we're turning towards the fall, and with that, everyone seems to be super busy. So we'll get into the show. Our guest today is Jill Silman from Inspirity. Jill, welcome to back, I guess, to Drive Through HR. How are you doing this afternoon?
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm ready for a big football weekend this weekend. So,
who are you pulling for? Is it Longhorns?
It is the Longhorns, in spite of everything that's been going on with our team for the last little bit. So I'm pretty much a homer, but Longhorns are my college team. Texans are my professional team, and of course my son's team that plays tonight. That's my biggest team, I guess.
That's college football is such a passion thing, as is the NFL.
Oh, yeah.
And really any sport, but college, I think more so, because more seems to me like more. And I know we're not talking college football, but it's like a of life, right? You go to school there, you become a fan, like you said, you're a homer, you grow up with it, and all
right.
of that. The Longhorns, that was kind of weird, the move, the fire
yeah.
the athletic director.
Yeah, it's probably about, I think most of us would think that it was maybe, 21 months too long in the offing, but it was really kind of surprising because he is one of us, but just the direction that the program was starting to go just didn't sit right with a lot of alums and, especially some of those that have pretty deep pockets. So I guess it is what it is. But it looks like things are kind of pointed. People are talking they're saying the right kinds of things right now. So I don't think it'll be too long before we're back up on top.
Well, I live in SEC country, although I'm not an SEC fan. I grew up in I went to school at Michigan and Michigan State, and then my sons both graduated from IU. So my family's all Big Ten, even though that's not really the best football credit, anymore. But that that whole thing with the Longhorns, I'll get off this in 1 second. I heard a kind of a SEC report the other day where they were like, it's the richest football program in the country, more money with income than any other college program. And but what they were talking about up here anyway was that AD was a lot of dysfunction, kind of like had really angered a lot of people, not just alums, but other parts of the university, coaches and stuff as well. Just sounded like a classic case of workplace dysfunction to me, just the bad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a bad fit. Square peg, round hole. And it was. It was more than just the alums, but I'm pretty sure that the feedback from the alums carried a lot of weight. But I think even, just the faculty and the faculty's inability now to be able to afford to go to a football game, those sorts of things just kind of got out of hand and really pretty quickly. So made some great coaching hires. We backed Charlie. We backed Shaka. So that's all good. But and it does sound like they're saying the right things right now. So we'll see. We'll see where we head.
Well, good luck.
Yeah.
As far as so Jill, what I told you I was going to do is to and then have you give us our bio, and instead I started talking Longhorns football, which okay, but tell us about Jill and tell us about Inspirity.
Well, football is a pretty big thing. When you start talking about my bio, I can talk football all day long. But I have been in the recruiting industry for more years than I'm willing to admit to, and have been with Inspirity now for about 4 years or so. And, of course, Inspirity as a company nationwide is probably very, very well known for the fact that we're a professional employer organization. My piece of the puzzle within Inspirity really lies in the recruiting services group, where we, of course, help our small, medium-sized businesses that we work with around the country. We help them to add to their ranks. But also we've turned our attention in the last couple of years to other clients as well, those who aren't necessarily involved with Inspirity at any other level. So we kind of serve two client groups, if you will. And then my group also serves our own internal recruiting as well. But we work with our PEO clients and we work with non-PEO clients, providing everything from, admin and LI type work all the way through to placing folks in the C-suite.
Okay. Cool. So you and I talked a little bit in the pre-show. You'd been booked for a while, and you're one of the few you're one of the few remaining guests who were kind of booked when we were still doing, you know, what I call the old drive-through HR script, which was what keeps you up at night and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, we talked about the fact that we've pivoted a little bit. I seem to say this on every show, but I guess I'll have to let it. We pivoted to this new twist, which is to talk about, you know, something that didn't necessarily go exactly the way you thought it might happen, and you know, how you grew from that and what you might have learned. And we're trying to get people to share stories of, you know, I guess the hashtags are Art of Failure and Success Stories. And I did have to chuckle inside. You said when you saw that this morning, you sort of freaked out for a second. So
not that I don't have failures in my past, because I have been doing this for a long time. There's a lot of stories and a lot of lessons to have been learned over the years. So it's not like I don't have material, probably, but I was just like, whoa, I didn't think that's what we were talking about. But, this has been a really interesting career, really interesting industry, this whole idea of recruiting. And just the changes that I have seen in the way that we look at the talent pool, the way we look at our clients in the third-party world, but probably more so just that just how work has changed over the years and how that's impacted recruiting. I can remember when I first got into the industry, I was doing more on the temp side than on any kind of direct or perm placement. So a lot of my old, my experience has been in that contingent. I can remember when I first got into the industry, if I was calling a client to say, hey, we have Susie coming over on Monday to help you with blah, 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 whatever, and she's great because she can do this and that, and you'd hear this dead silence on the other end of the phone. And, well, if she's that wonderful, why is she just working temp? You know, that was the attitude. Like, can't she get a real job? Or, I don't think she's as great as you're saying that she is. Now, in doing recruiting, when you find some of these employees who have had great tenure with an organization, great in my old school baby boomer kind of idea of great tenure, it's almost exactly the opposite, right? When we're talking to folks, they're like, wait a minute, like, she's never changed jobs for like the last 15 years. What's wrong? She can't find anything else, you know? There's been this huge sea change in just how we view work, how we view longevity and, tenure within an organization. And I think that, that's created a lot of opportunities for me to, possibly even miss the mark when I'm talking to a client or a hiring manager about what's really, really important to them and what, how they view workers. Because there is such a change over the years, and some people have joined along with the change, and others are kind of still hanging back in the in the old days. I think that's another thing too. I see a lot with hiring managers is just kind of they're a little disjointed, I guess, from what's going on in the workplace now. That idea of that career consumer and the idea that people spend an enormous amount of time researching, I don't know, if they're buying a cell phone, they're buying a new car, they're buying a washing machine, whatever they might buy. And I don't know why we don't think that people do the exact same thing when they're looking for a job, right? That they kind of approach their next role, with that kind of consumerism attitude. And so that's created some anxiety among some hiring managers. Some are oblivious to it still, which I think is a real problem. With organizations having to kind of up their game, if you will, as far as creating an experience that's going to be positive for the candidate flow.
Yeah.
That didn't have anything to do with us.
Yeah. It's interesting. I haven't done recruiting or staffing work really in since, I don't know, 2000, almost 10 years.
Right.
So when I look back on what I used to do, I mean, I still was kind of, I was always more of a fan of recruiting our own people, hiring our own people.
Mm-hmm.
But it was starting to morph a bit when I kind of, I was a generalist doing hiring, right? So it was not,
right.
It was starting to morph back then, but it was, the perception I think of temporaries was what you said for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But remember,
mm-hmm.
before the housing boom broke and when unemployment was like under 3%?
Yeah.
And,
mm-hmm.
The contingency staffing business has been growing for a long time, but I'm not sure if that was like where things really turned or not. But I know when I was trying to hire at a, like a place that had 150 employees. We weren't big at all, but we did pretty specialized work that required, you know, some skill. And so at that time, you know, we were trying anything: ads, bonuses, temps,
right?
And in some cases, the temp firms actually turned up better candidates than we could on our own. And I didn't stay in it. So I mean, do you think that's kind of, is that still true today, or is it more of a blend?
It seems to me
there's blending almost of those into one process for some companies anyway.
I agree with that statement, but I think what happened or what is happening is just a change in the attitudes of the employees, which has had a remarkable, has remarkably changed the workforce in and of itself. But I think so much of our attitudes have changed as people about what we expect about things, how we want to live our lives. Do we really want to live, especially for baby boomers, we want to live the second half of our lives like we did the first half, where we gave and gave and gave to our company, and, you know, maybe we're not really that much further ahead than we ever thought we were going to be. And was it really worth it? Because maybe we sacrificed family or something in the offing. So I think people are wanting to take more control, and that's maybe why you see, even with the contingent workforce, a higher skill level, or at least an equal skill level and skills and abilities and enthusiasm and all that sort of thing out of the contingent workforce, because, you know, people are really trying to take control of their own situation. And sometimes that means, I don't want to work there for all the rest of my life. I want to work there for the next 18 months. I want to work there for the next 6 months or whatever, because I have other things to do. And so I think it's just really changed. Just our attitudes have changed a lot of how we're having to look at who we're recruiting, why we're recruiting, when we're recruiting them, and what rocks we're looking under to find the right talent, because I think the workers have changed over time.
Yeah.
You know,
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, you know, Daniel Pink wrote that book, Free Agent Nation, a long time ago now. But I still refer to it because that almost looks like it's coming true right in front of our eyes, right? You know, where you don't have to join a large organization full time all the time to gain wealth. And that used to be our whole thought. You know, we thought when we graduated college, we needed to hook up with a large organization and wear the little bow tie and blue blazer and that sort of thing, and that was going to take us somewhere. But today, we all have the ability to do it for ourselves, I think. Recruits or employees, potential employees, are just being a lot more selective in where they invest their time and, for their next thing. So I think it's really in the attitudes of the people that has really driven this change.
I agree. It's funny. I was just thinking about, like, so, you know, the other day, and there's all these examples, and it's just like you take it for granted. The job I'm in now, I work in Georgia, and there's another person. We're a two-person organization, and the other person that works for me works in San Antonio, and we each have an office. We're not homebound. We each have an office we go to, but, you know, we both kind of work, you know, the hours, you know, and that's so common anymore. You just sort of take it for granted. It wasn't like that a long time ago, right? And yesterday from someone I've known for quite a while, I got a note on LinkedIn from somebody that said, I'm looking for a part-time virtual recruiting position, replace the full-time one I have now, because I'm kind of getting, you know, I have some other things I want to do, so let me know if you hear it. And it's just like, you know, hey, like I said, just in that same 10-window arc, there weren't part-time virtual recruiting jobs.
No. Yeah. Well, you know, and thankfully technology is really helping us to do these sorts of things, and things that were unimaginable, you know, 20 years ago, even 10 years ago. You know, the work from home, the do it when you want to do it. And, you know, and I also kind of laugh when we start talking about, like, work-life balance. There is no such thing. Because work-life balance would mean you give some to work and you give some to life. You know, like, one day it's heavier on the work, one day it's heavier on the life, and, you know, some hopefully can strike a chord. But there really isn't such thing as work. It's so, there is no line, right? when are we working, when are we off, what are we doing, you know. I can do as much at 2 o'clock in the morning as I might do at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So it's sort of this just continuum, and we're just kind of blending everything, work and life, and I think that people are looking to, if that's going to be the way that they're going to do it, they want to have some say-so about when they're working and that sort of thing. So I think the expectations for employees, if employers aren't aware, the expectations of employees are changing, and you know, I don't think we can beat that drum loud enough for companies to kind of jump on board if they haven't already.
Yeah, I'm gonna switch up on you a little bit, and
okay.
I don't know, you're actually the first person that, since this all transpired, that I've had the chance to ask this question about this topic. So I do a lot of work with stuff related to the National Labor Relations Board, and
uh-huh.
a couple weeks ago, the board released this decision, August 27th, actually. The case was called Browning-Ferris, and it radically altered the standard for joint employer status, you know, between companies
right.
and their contractors. Has your mm-hmm. company or business, I mean, not that you've had necessarily impact from it, but is that something that you're going to have to, like, contend with in your data, or is it too soon for you to really know what that means for people in your industry?
Right. So, you know, as we stand right now, Inferity really isn't in the contingent space at all. So from that perspective, from my recruiting group, I don't think that we're at issue right now. And, of course, with the PEO side of things, there's always been those kinds of questions going along. But we've been very, very structured. As a matter of fact, Inferity was one of the leaders in creating some of the legislation that kind of began to control that whole PEO relationship, even so far as working with IRS to create tax code that allows for this kind of co-employment thing. So I think from the PEO side, I think we're very well situated in that those changes didn't have so much of an effect. But I did read through those when they were announced a while back, thinking, oh, my goodness, this could really rock the contingent business if people aren't careful, if they're not paying attention to what they're doing. But I do think that it's got, I think, a lot of unintended consequences, like people can't even see really where some of that's going to impact their organizations. And some who have been a little bit asleep at the wheel, you know, better wake up, because they could get themselves kind of boxed into a corner without even realizing what they're doing. You know, so many times when new regulations come down like that, there's not necessarily a huge amount of publicity, and people are kind of learning it, you know, as they go. And if you're just happy, you know, lucky enough that you were on some RSS feed or something like that, I always thought that was weird with the agencies, how, you know, they're usually pretty quiet about when they're accepting public comments for change, and then pretty quiet when the new rules are passed down. And you know, but if you don't stay diligent, paying attention to these things, that could affect you. I do think that it could have some real ripples within the third party contingent world. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, no, it's the same thing on the employer side. I mean, there's, you know, because like
mm-hmm.
you said, this stuff has become ingrained in processes, and many companies rely on staffing agencies to fulfill parts
mm-hmm.
of their. The you know
mm-hmm.
handle parts of their business, and you know it even extends to things like security officers or cleaning crews that may come in from outside.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to change a
right.
lot of things. I was just curious.
It's going to change a lot of things. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So go ahead. No, I was going to say
okay.
Finish your thought.
No, I was just going to say, you know, luckily for us, because we're not so much in that space, you know, it's not had, you know, we haven't had to put all hands on deck to figure that one out. We're still, you know, mostly direct hire. So luckily we don't have to fuss with too much of that, except from how it may as a client company, perhaps, or something like that.
Yeah. So, I think a lot of people are going to find they're going to be calling their lawyers and drafting new contracts
mm-hmm.
for their relationships
mm-hmm.
and stuff.
So, mm-hmm.
so we've talked around a bit about Inspirity and some of the things you do, and you know how it was in the good old days and all that kind of stuff. And we're about halfway through the show, a little more than halfway through the show. So let me do a quick reset, and then I'm going to see if I can prompt you to maybe share a story with us related to the theme. Okay. So, This is Mike Vandervoort. You're listening to Drive Through HR, which we boldly claim is the highest rated daytime HR podcast airing today. And as I said the other day, we have no analytics to back that up, or at least I don't, but I found. And our guest is Jill Silman from Insperity, and we're talking a little bit about recruiting. And now we're going to pivot and talk a little bit about a success story. So for there to be to have been a risk taken, Jill, do you have an example of something that you may have, you know, some bold move you tried to make that maybe didn't go quite as you expected, and share with us what that was and how it how it turned out for you and what you learned from it?
Well, you know, I think my career is riddled with maybe I'm the consummate salesperson, I don't know, but my career is riddled with opportunities when I was in front of a client and they were asking for things that I was like, yeah, nobody's ever done this before, to my knowledge. You know, I've never heard of this before. But in the course of the meeting would say, yeah, this seems reasonable. This seems like we could do it. And then drive back to my office, beating my head on the steering wheel, going, how am I going to do this? How am I going to do this? How am I going to do this? You know, so I have been excited to be part of things and ideas that were really in their infancy. And while I think that I might have created something here locally, you know, very quickly when I would meet up with friends across the country, you know, other people were doing the exact same things, but I thought I was just the instigator, I guess. Reminds me of a story. A long time ago, I worked for a company named Audia. And now it's a Deco, right? But in its early days, it was started by Henri Lavalchet. And he used to tell the cutest story about how he was working in Switzerland, and he thought he had created the idea of temporary help, and then only to cross the border of Switzerland and go, oh, other people are doing this exact same thing. I think a lot of my success stories, if I would, you know, share most of them around the ideas of doing some of the on-sites and some of the other things that we've done in our career and some of the big growth modes, you'd have somebody on the podcast going, wait a minute, I did that in the same time period. So, but I think that one of the things that I would like to say it could be considered successful is just that willingness to try something new. Just because I hadn't seen it before or hadn't heard of it working successfully before, why not give it a shot? Today's a new day. It's a different time. And things that might not even work in, you know, 1997 are, you know, quite possible in the coming year. So I think that really my success stories have been that we were just willing to take on challenges typically posed by our clients and say, yeah, we can do that. Yeah, we can do that. Yeah, we can try to do that. You know, there may have been times where just recently we stepped off with an account and the timing just wasn't right. So I think that's the cool lesson too, right? That in order to be successful, even if you fail, don't throw it away and go, oh, that'll never work again. It's all about timing. And those same ideas, you know, if we revisit them in 2016 or 2017, you know, things may be just enough different that those ideas will take hold. I know Insperity as a group had never done what we'd call an RPO, you know, a recruitment process outsourcing. And several years ago we were addressing a client and they had a need for the whole PEO system, but recruiting was a big part of what was driving that decision. For whatever reason, they made a decision to go a different route. Fast forward a year later, and they lost their HR VP, and their HR group started to kind of fall apart. They called back, and they said, you know what? We don't want that whole PEO model, but what you guys shared with recruiting, we'd really like to try that. And would you be willing just to talk to us about that piece? And so, backed by the strength of our management team, a group went out to talk to this client, and actually the pricing point was probably bigger than what it would have been if they would have bought a year ago the entire thing. But they agreed, everything worked out, and we moved into a new space. But it was just because people said, you know, we've never done it. We didn't do it before. It's not something that was front burner, but let's investigate this. Can we really try it? And just having that open-mindedness, I think, creates a lot of the success and the innovation that we've seen in the industry.
Yeah, and there's I guess the other piece that I'm not that close to, but the whole part of technology and mm-hmm. the investment systems and human capital and all, I mean it's literally become a kind of a cutthroat industry in the last 10 again the same 10-year arc, technology applied to people, especially in hiring, recruiting, staffing, and all that kind mm-hmm. of stuff. And I, you know, since I've been so far away from it, I watch it as an interested professional, but I have no idea today, you know, if I had to go and pick a software system or anything. And I think what process I would take. I first thing I would do is call William Tinkup, one of my co-hosts.
You're right.
It's kind of overwhelming in a certain sense if you're not directly in it. So it's become a real, I guess all these areas, you know, I have the impression, just, you know, kind of vaguely have the impression that we're starting to see HR, you know, and there's been these talks about splitting it up and whether you should kill it and all these kind of things. I don't want to go down that mm-hmm. whole conversational path, but it does feel like, you know, there used to be this sort of like recruiters and generalists, you know, they sort of butted heads, and now there's much more cooperation. But at the same time, I think there's a much higher degree of specialization in the recruiting side. And if you're not in it, you know, you can't really be great at it. I mean, it's almost like that's a new profession, like compensation experts used to be in, you know, 20 right. years ago. And it's just different. Do you feel that? Do you think that's kind of true?
I'll buy that. I'll be right there with you thinking the exact same thing. I mean, because of technology and because of just – well, who heard of sourcing analysts, you know, 10 years ago? We probably had these research assistants and something which would be kind of the precursor, I guess, to all that. But who would have known 10 years ago that you could make a living being a sourcing analyst, right? We didn't even have that title. But so I do think that there is a high degree of specialization about what works and what doesn't work and being in it all the time, because the market's changing every day. But having your finger on the pulse, knowing which rocks to look under and those sorts of things is a very specialized skill in today's market, because it's a moving target. And if you're not in it all the time, I think that's one of the things, you know, back to the old way that we used to do drive-through HR when we talk about what keeps you up at night. You know, one of the things that I just want to run around screaming about is how our hiring managers and our HR groups need to be aware of this whole idea of the career consumer. You know, we see those statistics all the time that 60% of your staff isn't actively looking for a job, but they're pretty open to the fact that if somebody reached out to them, they'd go.
Right.
You know, if we know this, then what are we doing about it? And what kind of technology or what kind of specialization does that recruiter have out there that's going to be able to dip into our workforce and, you know, take somebody that we don't want to go, to let go. So I do agree that there is a high degree of specialization now in recruiting, whether it's just being the subject matter expert in a certain industry or certain vertical, to just being a whiz at using the tools that are at our disposal. Technology has made our job easier and harder all at the same time, you know?
Yeah, I do. And it changed, as we talked about a minute ago, it changed the way we work. So we have about a mm-hmm. minute or two left. So I'm going to ask you, if you had to go back today and give, you mm-hmm. know, young Jill Silman some advice, career advice or otherwise,
uh-huh.
would it be?
She made some pretty good moves along the way already, but I think it is just that, don't be afraid. Get out there and do it and try it. You may fail, but failure is just one step closer to success. So I think she wouldn't have been I would encourage her to not be as timid as early on in her career, but just to pick up, go, and try it, you know. There's always going to be another job.
They're always,
you know,
I guess. Okay. Well, listen, I want to, so Jill, before we go, first of all, thanks for being on the show and we're going to hit the half hour here in just a second. So before we go, tell people, I know your Twitter handle is at J Silman, S-I-L-M-A-N.
Right.
Tell people else they might find you if they want to get in touch or, you know, find out more about
Right. So my About Me is Jill Silman. So you can go there and find all the different social media links. But at Jay Silman's Twitter handle, jill.silman@insperity.com is email. And would love to continue the conversation.
All right. Well, thanks so much for being on Drive Through. It's Friday afternoon, and we can all get out of here and start the weekend in a couple hours. So have a great weekend, Jill, and we'll get you on the show again sometime in the future, okay?
Thanks so much. Hook 'em horns.
Bye.